This is America.
Okay, we are now recording.
Congratulations.
Yay. If you are a listener, please hit star 6. Okay, and everyone's muting their phones. This is a very, very special teleconference of HSA, Healing Storytelling Alliance, because we not only have one amazing storyteller, we're actually having two. And it's going to be a conversation. This is really to whet our appetites for a pre-con that's coming up on the Wednesday before the NSN conference, and we'll hear more about that at the end of the conversation. I'm Rivka Willick, and it is my absolute pleasure to introduce the first speaker, or talker, or interviewer, or conversationalist, and that's Laura Sims. Probably everyone who's listening knows her name. Anyone who knows really almost anything about storytelling has probably heard about her. She has done work all over the world with Healing Story. Whoever just came in, if you would hit star 6 and mute, you can be part of the listening conversation for the first half of the conversation. So anyway, back to Laura. She has done amazing work all over the world and individually with story and introducing story and healing story. But for me, when I think of Laura, I immediately think of one teller who just wandered into one of her workshops about 15 years ago, was so enthralled with it that she went back home and started teaching storytelling all over the state of New Jersey. That's Carol Titus, who is being recognized this year. And her whole love of storytelling just came from a workshop with Laura. And I think one of the amazing things that storytelling does is it's almost like a healthy virus. It spreads and spreads. And one amazing storyteller can ignite amazing things that just keep going and going. So with that, I'm going to stop talking and hand it all over to Laura.
Great. Thank you, Rivka. This is really not sort of one speaker and then another, but very much a passionate and hopefully deep and beneficial conversation between Dina Metzger, my beloved friend, and in so many ways, deep inspiration. Dina is a writer, a genuine healer, a brilliant woman, and who for me is a fearless storyteller, and particularly a fearless story listener. And when I mean fearless, I mean someone who trusts in the spirit so thoroughly and listens beneath the surface to what actually is coming up from the heart and from the environment in which someone is speaking. And has done remarkable work, which she'll talk about, including a constant council of people seeking healing. And she's done work with people who are ill, both psychologically, physical illness, people suffering with really the degeneration of climate, people out of balance, people with exceptional joy who want to enrich their lives and live more fully. A lot with people returning from war at present, and Dina will tell you about that. And we really have an ongoing conversation. The title is Story is Our Medicine. And I wanted to begin by thanking Dina for doing this with me, because I feel that every time I have an encounter with Dina as a student of story, which I feel I am, and a student of spirit, I can go further with more confidence. And she said in the description, which we all had, all indigenous peoples have known that story is a medicine. It is at the very foundation of healing. And I really wanted to ask Dina about that sentence, about the idea of story, of what is story, because it's such, we use the word all the time, and yet inside this simple sentence is a kind of entrance to the heart of reciprocity and interdependence and a way of having relationship with ourselves in the world. So what is for you, Dina, who's now going to speak, we're so lucky.
Oh,
what is
a
story?
So lucky as well. I'm so glad to be here with you and speaking about all of this, that which is so deeply in both our hearts. I'd like to start by saying what story isn't, because that feels most important, and that's really simple. Story is not what happened. It may include what happened, but it's not this happened and this happened and this happened. For me, story is a little world. At the center of the story may be an image or an event that acts like a magnet and pulls together all the necessary parts for that ecological world to exist. And that's one of the reasons it's a medicine, because it brings together what needs to be together. And very often our illnesses, spiritual, emotional, and physical, are because we are disconnected from the essential, or we're living on a very narrow band that doesn't include everything. So indigenous peoples know this, because indigenous people all over the world who have not been who preceded being affected by, let's say, Western culture, they live one way or another by the maxim that is spoken in the most articulate way by the Lakota Sioux people, saying, all my relations. So story, by its nature, brings together all our relations into one whole world. And then we can move into the story. We can begin to live in the story, because it will often tell us the nature of our illness as well as the path for our healing. And it will surprise us. That's the other part. I think the essence of a really good story, or a true story, is that when we hear it, whether we're listening to a traditional story or we're listening to a personal story, there will be some surprise in it that we didn't invent. It just belongs there. And that's some of its vibration, let's say.
So many things come to mind when I'm listening to you speak, and what came to mind is almost a kind of like energy wheel of connection that engages us imaginatively, where we are almost in the listening or in the telling, connected to the source of creativity, that the imagination, what you were calling before, like the this happens, that happens, the sort of text or the surface of the story, is penetrated, and what comes up for us is another way of knowing that's all-inclusive, that's not just intellectual or disconnected, but is connected inward and therefore outward through this process of imagination.
And it's the real world.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you know, when you listen to the story, it's the real world from which we have been exiled. So I think story reconnects us to the fullness of creativity. And so we're, in a sense, we're healed just by knowing what genuineness is. You know, I have a simple image for this. About 3 years ago, I had the idea that we should invite veterans, or more to the point, war-traumatized people, to come and tell their stories to each other. And that somehow those who were the combatants and those who were the victims of combat would be speaking with each other, but they were all the victims of war. And this went on for a while. But what really happened, what was really important about this, was frankly not the stories that were told, but the fact that we sat around a fire at night. So in Los Angeles, we could sit at night around a fire, not in the summer, but we could do it in the winter or the fall or spring when it wasn't too hot. And there we were in the old form, speaking the truth from our hearts. And doing that over months, and now really whenever we can, whenever there is an occasion where we can have a fire and sit around it in the night, everything that's told has another quality to it. And part of it is that we know that people have done this for thousands and thousands and thousands of years. And being connected with that history also eases us.
Sort of the sense of not being limited to this one incident or this one time that renders us in a kind of panic, but allows us to really feel back and connect with something before war, before our lives.
And also knowing that before war, and also to connect in some way, that knowing that people have suffered, we're not the only ones.
Mm-hmm.
And that heartbreaking camaraderie around the human condition.
In fact, I thought it's kind of like, singing old grief songs chorally. The experience is actually joyful.
Yes.
Because we're lifted out of the victimization of suffering, and we can share it. So there's no... I loved what you said in your blog. Dina has a blog that is so worth reading called Ruin and Beauty. And the most recent one is called Revisioning Medicine. And one sentence, I didn't find this because it just leaped out to me in what you're talking about. It said, healing does not create enemies, but creates connection. So this whole idea of an enemy where you don't recognize the human dilemma of suffering and the dilemma of impermanence creates enemy which is just stuck. But
right
there in that circle by the fire, we're connected to each other.
In the circle by the fire, the man who served in the first Gulf War is recognized and known and seen and felt as broken as the woman who survived the Holocaust. And I'm not trying to compare here. I'm just saying each one of them, the man that was pulled into war when he was a young man, didn't know what he was going into and felt betrayed, like the woman who survived the Holocaust, sitting there in their grief and with their with the recognition of each other's pain. And
yes,
so
and that, I think, is the joy, actually.
Yes.
In the connection comes this kind of unbiased joy.
Well,
you know, it makes me think I was... Yeah, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, because it is beautiful, you know, listening to these stories, feeling the heart open, feeling the truth being told, feeling people in this particular case talking about betrayal, and which is a theme I think that goes through so many of the stories that I hear now when people are ill or suffering, feeling a great betrayal. And one of the betrayals is the disconnection from the natural world, the disconnection from values, the disconnection from the ways things used to be, the disconnection from compassion, etc.
I also feel one of the great betrayals is that people are not recognizing the, and this is very Buddhist, of course, the constant shared sort of reality of suffering. And without that, they're always the expectation that they've either been victimized or something is wrong. And that blocks the kind of healing which you're talking about, which is the beauty aspect or the revelation of connection.
Or that in addition to the suffering, there's also a wisdom that's been given to them, and that will also sustain them and transform them at the same time. Because to feel one with history or to feel one with others who are suffering at this particular time expands the heart and our consciousness. We wouldn't choose the suffering. We wouldn't inflict it on anyone to, quote, educate them. But since we all suffer in different ways, it is important to see where it takes us.
The actual journey. It's why I love that many of the really great traditional stories, because they are a journey through obstacles. They allow us to actually experience suffering, almost a template or a mirror, so that we can go through it and reflect on it deeply in preparation for our lives.
And there is a breakdown, and there is an obstacle, and there are moments of despair in those stories. And then very often, the assistance comes, let's say in the Psyche story, the assistance comes from the tiniest, least likely being, the little ants that separate the beans from the lentils, from the rice, for example. And that's also a profound teaching, that the healing or the assistance is not in the logical place we would think it is. And so story requires...
Yes, nor is it in the solution.
Nor is it in the solution. And so we
but
have to have
kind
a kind
of sorting out the awareness,
right.
The detail, the awareness, the sorting out of the tiniest things.
Right.
You know, I was in the north of Nepal with organization Search for Common Ground, working with ex-combatants, boys and girls, who had become activists. And so I always begin by telling sort of these pithy wisdom tales that I love that are somewhat uncanny. Not because the story itself has a pointed meaning, but because it engages people in this kind of mysterious, surprising way in which you suddenly have associations that are unexpected from your own life. Like spirit rises up to speak to you in some way.
Mm-hmm.
And so it just sets the ground. And then they were telling their stories of their lives. And afterwards, the director's wonderful man, Michael Shepler, said, "So what's the common ground? What are the elements of everybody's stories that are common ground?"
Mm-hmm.
And I said, "Well, actually, that wasn't the common ground. The common ground is that everybody was listening to each other's stories."
Ah, listening.
And that was like a revelation for all of them, just sort of like lifted the veil of having to find all these analyzed data and meanings and suddenly just recognizing in that listening is the capacity for connection.
And isn't listening at the very heart of every story, especially, let's say, when you're working with someone and you're looking for the story of their illness or the story of being a combatant, et cetera, even the person who's directing this in some way or calling the story forth really, really, really has to listen. For that,
you know, that's the most difficult part, because it's in one hand, we listening is something we do naturally, but we also have to be trained.
Yes.
And what is that training? So that we listen to the actual story that's being told, other than our opinion of what should happen or the surface of it, to really listen in to how the story is being told, the image that is sort of the key, that if you hear, you can open the door to a much deeper story that somebody can tell, that reconnects them, like rewiring from inside.
Well, I think the first thing is that you must know that you don't know anything. That you do not know what is going to be said and what will be important.
Mm.
And
hi.
So you have to hear, right, that unexpected element. What is going to come in?
So listening rather than listening for.
That's right. Waiting for that moment of surprise. You know, Laura, I have a story in my mind that, to me, illustrates it, and it's a story that involves you. And I think you know in a second what I'm gonna tell, because I've asked
okay.
you to tell this many times. It has to do with your having been in Haiti, and you're having told a classic story. And the story for me is not the classic story that you told, but the little boy who comes to you afterwards and takes your hand and tells you who you are by citing the story that you told. And so for me, the story is the classic story plus the little boy plus what happened to you when he did that.
Yes, oh my goodness, I just saw him again, actually.
Did you?
But, yeah, I just came back about 10 days ago. And really, I went for him. I was called.
So here the story is expanding, right? By what you're saying right now.
Mm-hmm.
Now we are truly in the story.
And when he saw me coming back into the camp, he just looked at me, and it was as if no time had passed. As if he knew. He just knew I was there in response to that moment, which was true, because what happened was that I got caught up in all of these things I thought I should be doing. And then suddenly, there he was, and everything fell away, like the walls of any expectation or idea of what I was doing just fell away. And he woke me up to the core. It was the greatest gift. I felt denuded of any self-importance ever, except to know that the only worthwhile activity was listening and sharing stories with these children there. Not
and also free from external and bureaucratic expectation. And this is the second time he did this for you.
Yeah.
So that's exactly how you told the story of your interconnection with him the first time. So the story is now expanding. Who is this little angel?
Right.
Right. That's the surprise. Who
and
is
this is the angel that is, I mean, for me, that being in the camp is actually, you know, it's troublesome, and I don't wish to anybody that their life is utterly, you know, changed and you lose everything. But there is some quality of all that we assume we need being taken away by actually a natural disaster. You don't even have someone to blame. And that what is there is so redolent with resilience and care that people, there's a frustration, but they are living right there on the land with each other. And so everything is, it's simple and it's immediate in a way that is life-enhancing if it's not renamed or a story isn't told that they're victims and everything is really terrible. Suddenly to see the beauty of that situation and how they're living that story, which allows you to feel your life force, is so incredibly empowering. Not empowering for something, but just living.
This is so remarkable to me because I had a dream, and a dream, of course, is a story that spirit sends on the 8th, and it's exactly what you're saying to me. The shorthand of the dream was that I was with a bus. I was on a bus of prisoners, and we were going somewhere. We were going to the mountains. We were trying to find somewhere to be, and I was quickly calculating how much money I had, and if we had to find motels for you know, 20, 30 people, and we had to get food for them. It was, there just wasn't that money. It was completely impossible, but the only alternative was prison. And so at the end of the dream, this is the end. This is what happens at the end. We've stepped out of middle-class solutions to such problems. Now I'm thinking that four people can share a bowl of food, and we don't need utensils, just as one does in Africa, for example, in Liberia, in a morning feast. You eat out of a common bowl. I am imagining that we will somehow deal with what is not sufficient, that we will sleep sitting up, leaning against each other, and eating out of common bowls without utensils, and we will be happy outdoors. We will accomplish this. Unstated is the understanding that going back to a prison situation is the only other alternative, and we refuse it.
It is so good to recognize that the prison is in our own minds.
Yes. And maybe
and
also in the lives that our culture or the society has created.
Yes.
That's a vast prison system. And
for me, one of the great healing powers of genuine storytelling, in a story that engages, that surprises, that is heard, is that it liberates the inside. It liberates the spirit, regardless of circumstance.
Right.
And that the actual power is that then what appears to be this totalitarian situation or impossibility, it's changed. It begins to change. It may not change immediately, and it may not change in familiar ways. But that if it doesn't happen inside of us in this way, if we don't retrust, you know, the Hindu people knew that inside, in the seed, in the heart, was the whole universe, the sun and moon, and this trust in really enlivened and enlightened imagination.
And in each other.
Yeah, yes.
Which also feels very essential, that the commonality, to trust each other again. And instead of meeting someone, you know, and saying a little defensively or frighteningly, well, you know, who are you and what do you do and all of that, you know, sort of ranking people. What's your story?
Exactly.
And there's such intimacy and trust develops from that if someone really tells their story.
Because when you listen to the story, you are that story.
Yes.
And there's no difference. There's
right.
No hierarchy whatsoever in the listening. I always think of this man who brought his daughter to hear a storytelling I was doing in a park. Very well-dressed man. He had not only a novel, but a newspaper and a dog and his daughter. And when the story began, the newspaper kind of fell open, and he wasn't looking at the book, and he sat in kind of this kind of almost undignified clump of a way with his mouth open, that if he had seen it, he would have been horrified. And as the story came to an end, he lifted up the newspaper, he put back the book, and he sat up. And his daughter and his dog had absolutely no problem with kind of just listening through their elbows or through the tail, and sometimes they were each sitting on chairs around him, very alert, other times spinning around, but listening. But this man was focused, and at the end he came up to me, all buttoned back up, with his daughter then spinning around totally, you know, uncaring about me anymore. And he said to me, "My little girl loved your story." There was a moment I wanted to say, hey, you know, some smart aleck Brooklyn thing, and then I thought, it's so true. And I just said, well, thank you so much. Mm-hmm. And there we were.
But no, but there's another part to the story that's implied by what you said, but hadn't yet been articulated, and that he didn't know to say it. He should have said, my little girl and the dog loved the story.
The dog, I mean, actually,
well, that's
what
you
so
said. You said the little girl was sitting in
the
way of
the
dog.
Yes, the dog was amazing.
That's right.
I mean,
there's the surprise.
Well,
the
animals. The animals, I've been so thinking about the lions today, and just that, you know, I've thought about how if I could slow down enough, you know, when I was working in the zoo in Romania, mm-hmm. if I slowed down enough, mm-hmm. our communication was impeccable, but it was never on my mind's terms. It was utter presence
mm-hmm.
and a comfort, a sorrow and a joy that is, I know you have felt in Africa in
yes.
the face of the elephants.
Well,
this communication.
Or that I felt here for several maybe a year or two, I visited the Los Angeles Zoo once a week or so to be with a gorilla that I had noticed because he was so angry and violent. And I realized how upset he was. And I started going with my friend Valerie Wolf, who's a shaman, and we went every week. And it did not take long for that gorilla to recognize us and to begin a true connection. And in some way, you know, in my mind, we would go. Valerie would often dream him, and so she would think her dream to him. I don't know what stories we told each other, except that we were meeting across the species line, and that was a true event. So the story, sometimes the story of this connection illuminates something that, if we have to speak about it in logical or scientific terms, the whole story falls away.
Yes, it brings me, we have to stop and open for questions, but brings me to what you say in revisioning medicine, that we have to remember not to harm.
Yes.
To do no harm at all costs, no harm.
Yes. Well,
so we should let people ask questions.
Okay. So people should unmute. Is that it?
Unmute. Yeah, I don't know how to do that. Maybe Riska does.
Yeah, I people who would like to ask questions, unmute, ask your question, and then after you're done, remute it so the next person will have some. It won't get too noisy because I know we must have at least a dozen people listening right now.
Mm.
Okay, so would someone like to start with a question? Well, the way to unmute? Okay, great. Okay, good.
This is Gail Rosen.
Hello, Gail.
Hi, Dina. Thank you, both of you. It was a fascinating and a conversation. What a gift to be able to listen to it. Where would you recommend beginning?
Tell us a story. I'm not kidding.
beginning in what way? What beginning?
To get a feel for experiencing the practice you're speaking of.
For me, it's oftentimes really in silence and beginning to listen, discern between, begin to note
listening to us. Our mind interrupts us from listening and really recognize, like turning
it
back to whatever is occurring.
I'm on
with
it.
Full, yeah. That's a good place to begin. I mean, I do that through, you know, the practice of meditation, which for me has been so powerful. But I think that it can be done just with a truly abiding, deep listening in which we're willing to see how little we're listening and then keep aligning ourselves with space with more and more trust.
And I think there's also the practice of simply finding every opportunity to listen. I've been listening, let's say, to stories for at least 50 years, or maybe really 70 years. And there's always the place in me, and it really was there from the time I was about 5 years old, that I was asking myself, what else is being said here? What is in the white spaces between? And
yeah, so is it asking the question when you feel that space? Because that space is very, that kind of space of listening is visceral. So do you ask someone, can you tell me more?
No, I'm sometimes I will, but it was about, you know, in hearing the story that you told about the man and the little girl, and the story had a certain intent, but I was also aware of the posture of the dog because you had included it. And so then that part of the story came in.
Yes.
And that brought so much more that man was disconnected from into the story. He was not only not able to understand that he had been listening, but he wasn't really aware of his intimates, and that he and the dog and the little girl had been in a similar posture, but then he had separated himself from their liveliness, let's say.
You know, it brings to mind again, only this is helpful in terms of listening. The woman who told the story during the earthquake in Haiti, who suddenly her dog appeared and kept leading her to the left or to the right, and wherever the dog led her, behind her, she might have gone, something fell where she would have died. And when she was outside, and she found her daughter, and her daughter was crying. Her daughter was crying because she had seen the dog crushed immediately. And she looked. Who was the dog who took her? Who, what actually happened? What that level of listening into the world?
Oh, that takes my breath away.
See, that kind of story reminds me of you, Dina, because you always talk freely about spirit in a way that is so familiar and trusting, knowing that that's the way we have to live.
Well, that's the element from which we are, so disconnected, and it is, you know, in terms of recognizing it as a ongoing benevolent presence in our lives, and but it is the element from which all indigenous wisdom arises, that relationship between the spirits and our lives, and you know, I mean, for me, over the years, the extraordinary circumstances, which for me are also at the heart of every story, or most stories, they happen so often that I can't pretend anymore that spirit has been there.
So I think what you're saying is we begin by
being in our lives with listening and presence. And when the story comes from that place, listening not only to the content of the story, but listening to what's actually taking place and how it's being heard.
And what is being drawn into the story? If the story, the circumstances of it are the magnetic center, what else is being drawn into it that becomes a part of it, and then we have the real whole story?
Could I ask a question?
Yes.
Yeah, of course.
Yes. Along those lines, in the case of your visiting the angry gorilla at the zoo, where there was no verbal, I assume, communication, what effect did you think it had both on you and the gorilla in that communication, or that, I assume, silent communication? Or could you tell more about visiting that angry gorilla and what effect it had on him and you?
Well, the effect on me, of course, was that I made an alliance with this being, and I began to visit him in the way that I would visit a beloved human being who happened to be in prison. And I was aware that I only had so much time when I could be with him. These were circumstances, you know. I could only go to the zoo so often. It's only open certain hours, et cetera, et cetera. But he would come to us, and he would throw dirt at us. And then, when it was time for us to leave, sometimes he would go away, and then we would start leaving, and he would come back, and he would throw dirt at whatever people say, well, when they throw dirt at you, it's hostile. But what else did he have to communicate with us, to show a whole group of people that were around the railing that there were two people in particular that he was throwing this dirt at again and again and again? The sad story of this gorilla was that he was taken to a zoo on the East Coast to breed, and he died. And actually, it's an entirely sad story, because we also went to visit a particular elephant, and we went to visit a polar bear. Why these three? Who knows? Each one of them died within the year, and the elephant also died from having been transported away from her friend. She had one friend, and she was sent somewhere. And by the time they brought her back, her friend died, and then she died.
Wow.
But was your intent in making those visits to establish a sense of communication through just being present on a fairly regular basis?
Simply to say, in your horrific captivity, we would like you to know that someone is here. I don't know what difference it'll make. Someone is here and caring about it. Then, of course, in another world, secular world, I commit myself to do whatever I can to end captivity in zoos. So that I make an offering on behalf of the goodness of these relationships. I don't think the elephant ever noticed us. I think the polar bear was so traumatized, it had no idea that we were there. But the gorilla knew.
Thank you.
You know, it makes me think of those parts of the stories that are so difficult, or a character that is so violent or angry or having the worst intent, and often we caricature them, or we want to whitewash them, or we want to kill them off. And yet I always feel like I find a way to fall in love with them because they're the one that reconnects me to something or makes something happen in the story or expresses the deepest imbalance.
Mm-hmm.
So I love them and never want to get rid of them, but honor their presence because without them, the complete journey doesn't happen.
Well,
and
so now you have explained why story is medicine, because you have taken us to the no, to what I call the no enemy way. You've taken us, in my view, to the only way that we can heal the horrific violence and brutality of this time, which is to find some connection. And I know when you tell the story that that intent, that that your heart intent is somehow in the telling of the story.
Yes, it doesn't mean that they are not doing something horrific.
Right.
It's, but it is not limiting myself to a caricature of good versus bad.
Right.
And
no, I don't know why. Rumpelstiltskin is right here with me from the moment you started.
And you know his name.
Right. I know his name.
Rumpelstiltskin is with you.
But isn't he that kind? Isn't he that kind of quality? You know, that,
you know, he is, yeah. And at the end, actually, he's not killed. He's actually returned to some kind of deep natural force. He's back in the earth where he belonged in some ways, where he is a live, energetic force. Does someone else have a question for a little time left?
I think I do.
I can't ask you. I have a question for you, which I can ask if nobody is unmuted or asking.
Someone just said, I have a question. I think it was Louisa, but...
Oh.
Hello?
Was that you?
Yes.
Said you had a question?
No, not me. I'm listening to the question.
Okay.
I'm listening very intently. Somebody else had a question.
Okay.
I have a question.
Yes.
I'm sorry, can you hear me?
Yes.
Yeah.
Hi, this is Jeremy Fan in Thousand Oaks, California.
Uh-huh.
Hi, thank you, Dean and Laura, for your presentation. Very interesting. As far as I'm concerned, in terms of healing capacities, I really feel that doctors should be handing out prescriptions to story as much as medications.
I'm with you.
but I'm wondering, has there been any like scientific study done regarding that? Some control group, people were told stories as opposed not to told, and the subsequent effects?
The only thing that comes to mind that I know of, which is slightly different, but maybe it's in the same area, is that there was a study in the Journal of the American Medical Association about a group of people that were brought together to write their stories, to write difficult stories, and they, for 20 minutes a week, as I recall, for 6 or 8 weeks. And they were in, you know, the most unstory-like environment. They were in a hospital room, a white room, nothing, you know, nothing interesting or whatever. And they just had to write for this period of time. That was it. And there was remarkable improvement, which lasted 6 months later, in various illnesses, but particularly rheumatoid arthritis.
Oh, that's great.
But, you know, I have been gathering physicians and physicians and healers to create a medicine that does not do harm, and to create a real peer alliance between the ways of the healer and the ways of the physician. And mm-hmm. the very core of the work we do together is what we call Indigenous Grand Rounds, and that is always asking the, quote, identified patient, the person who's come for healing, to tell their story. And we listen to the story in great depth. And it makes a remarkable difference.
Absolutely.
So the only thing I say that the difference between handing out like a prescription of a story, which could become like, the way sometimes medical profession does harm by, you know, this is the illness and this is the medicine, that the story is much more based on the deep listening of what's needed in the moment. Sometimes it is a story you tell. Sometimes it's a story you've heard from the person, but it's not prescribed.
It's
about
not
learning
prescribed,
something.
And the physician recognizes that the true expert in this moment of diagnosis, let's say, is the afflicted one.
Yes.
And so we keep, with great respect, you know, asking, okay, what else? What else do you want to tell? What else is here? You know, what do you understand? And then things appear that call for a very different, very often, very different treatment. I remember,
which actually becomes a healing for the doctor.
Everyone gets healed at a healing. That's my mm-hmm. basic belief. I remember one instance when we were dealing with a woman who had many physical ailments and chemical sensitivities and was really miserable. And after a while, the story emerged. On some level, it seemed obvious that her father was a chemist, and he had worked for a paint company. Mm. And he would bring home all these wonderful colors and paints for the children to play with. He certainly didn't mean any harm. But later on, she said, oh, you know, many of his paints never became commercial. And then, you know, sort of that silent moment, and why didn't they, and what was in them. And part of her healing, truly, part of her finding more energy and doing what one needs to do to boost an immune system, was becoming an activist on behalf of the environment.
Mm. It makes me think of a woman who came to see me who was a therapist in her 70s who had a heart attack, and she was furious. And so I spent about 2 hours listening to stories of her childhood. And at the end of it, I said, we have so little time, let me just ask you a question about one little incident that she mentioned of sitting on the veranda overlooking the ocean and so forth. And I said, well, what if there was a little house inside your heart? And she said, oh, that's make-believe. I said, oh, come on, I'm a storyteller. So, who was in it? And the story that came out was a story of a child in her heart who knew how to rewire her heart, but had to turn the lights off so it could be rewired. And summarizing this, it was a long session.
Of course.
In that, she burst out laughing because this heart attack that she was so angry at and felt so betrayed suddenly in the story revealed itself to be the way that she could start her renew and start her life from another place again.
Yeah.
It doesn't always happen that neatly, but it is a kind of gorgeous example of being able
exactly
to understand your medicine, your own medicine.
Right. And it is very often that the story of the illness is contains within it the story of what needs to be healed.
Yes.
And how the life needs to be healed.
Yeah.
We only have a couple more minutes, and the happy news is this conversation is going to continue for a full day on Wednesday the 27th at the HSA, the Healing Story Alliance, pre-conference in Cincinnati. And I was hoping that Laura could tell us a little bit more about the pre-con in our last 2 minutes.
Well, it's Rivka is actually part of the troublemaking team who conjured up this day. And so the day is actually beginning with a keynote by Dina about the nature of story of medicine and healing. And then we're going to have, after questions and answers, we're going to have two world cafes, which are sort of all-inclusive, creating meaningful, intentional conversations of people who are present, so we could explore how we are using story in our lives, how we would like to be using it, what we need to learn still, where we would like to see ourselves as healers, et cetera, and really harvesting the responses. Throughout, there'll be some sort of story activities, and at the end of the day, my little daunting job is to give a kind of afterward keynote, which is a kind of summarizing what everyone has said, so that it is a day shaped by who we all are in this flowering field of tremendous importance. Does that sound like it, Rivka?
That sounds great.
Sounds like an amazing day. I wish I could be there.
Well, I wish you could
know?
Be there.
Yeah, I mean, I have so many stories about story healing that this is, you're really on to something, and I think that the more people we can enlist in this kind of medicine, the healthier the whole society will be.
I agree.
Yeah,
and
we're definitely into mischief.
If everyone can help us really spread the word so more people can come into this conversation, that would be fantastic.
Yes. Yes, indeed.
Well, I want to just say something because I feel we're very, very lucky to have Dina on this call. I'm like an old hat for most of you, but to have someone who has devoted their life in the way Dina has, with sort of undiluted sense of deepening journey and love and brilliance. And please, you know, Dina's books have been so important to me, Entering the Ghost River, Writing for Your Life, Feral, books that she's written about recovering from breast cancer. These are remarkable pieces of writing that are really alive. They are living story on the page, sort of defying the page. And well worth our reading and studying and sort of being involved in to deepen our understanding of the healing power of story and also healing in the world today.
Thank you. And I just have to also recommend Our Secret Territory, which is your most beautiful book on storytelling.
Thank you. And your most beautiful. My son, at a reading, was asked, you know, what part of my book he wanted to read. He said, I want to read Dina's introduction. So beautiful.
Well, what a pleasure. What a joy to be with all of you today.
Yeah, Rivka, thank you for doing this, and for all of you who are there, muted and unmuted.
Thank you, Laura.
Okay, and this will be posted on the HSA website within a few days, so if you know people who'd like to listen to it, they can go to the website and find it.
Wonderful.
Okay.
Thank you.
This has been very wonderful. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye. Bye. Love you, Dina.
Bye.
Love
bye.
You.
See you soon.
Bye. Yeah. Okay, I'll call you soon.
Okay. Much love. It was terrific.
Thank you. Shalom.
Bye. It's all right.
mention where the website is.
Well done.
Everyone off?
Thank you. Bye-bye. There were about 12 people. Did that hang up or do I have to?